News and interviews from across the world and right here in the central Susquehanna Valley. This is WKOK Sunrise on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
Thank you for joining us on WKOK Sunrise. Rob Center starting out, as he always does on Monday morning, doing a fabulous job getting us off on the right foot for another week of WKOK Sunrise interviews. On the news line with us now is Stephen Bloom. He's vice president of the Commonwealth Foundation, a conservative group that really works hard to make sure that the state legislature has tools and information and experts and people and ideas to work with in order to make the state to run a little bit more smoothly. He has a law degree from Dickinson, is a former state House member for two terms and a former U.S. congressional candidate, now vice presidenting the Commonwealth Foundation. Thank you for calling in, Stephen.
Absolutely. Delighted to be here.
I do appreciate it. Well, we've been watching the budget negotiations sort of through the lens of the Associated Press in Harrisburg, and one day they're talking about just the surplus in general. The next day, tax decreases and minimum wage increases. So we hear Restore PA pop up, and then everything goes back behind closed doors, and we don't hear anything. So in your viewpoint, give us an update on the state budget negotiations.
Well, as you know, the budget deadline is June 30th, so we're finally into what I would call crunch time in the legislative season. It's been a couple of months where the governor and the leaders of the House and the Senate have been posturing and positioning themselves, but now we're to the point where they're actually going to have to go to the table and discuss their differences and come up with some kind of a overall budget framework. The key thing here is that right now the governor has put his number of how much he wants to spend out on the table. It's $34.1 billion, plus he overspent by about $700 million during the past year. So he's basically out looking for about a $2 billion increase, which is far and above over the rate of inflation plus population growth. The Republican-controlled House and Senate have been talking about a lower number, a number that would fit in with that what we call the Taxpayer Protection Act number of no more spending than the rate of population growth plus inflation. And now we're finally to the point where the governor and the House leader and the House speaker and the Senate president and the president and the Senate leader are going to have to sit at the table and figure out how are they going to reach an arrangement where they can all agree. And that's been the bugaboo for the last 4 years with Governor Wolf. He's always asked for a lot. And thankfully, the Republican-controlled legislature has stood up to him, and he hasn't gotten a lot. He's asking for a lot again this year. He's not asking for quite as much as he has in past years. He's, I think, learned a little bit from the process over the past 4 years. But right now, the job of the legislature is to protect the taxpayers to make sure that we don't overspend in this Commonwealth.
If the GOP, this Taxpayer Protection Act amount, were imposed, what would the budget be that could come out of these negotiations?
The cap, the highest number, should be about $33.4 billion if you, in fact, use that rate, which would be about 2.12%. And that would make sure that the government isn't growing faster than people's incomes, that it's proportionally no bigger than it was the year before. So that's the number that we're at the Commonwealth Foundation. We're looking for a number of $33.4 billion or less. You mentioned in your intro the talk of the surplus. And it's important for listeners to understand and taxpayers to understand, when people say there's a surplus in Harrisburg this year, it doesn't mean we have extra money over and above our needs. All it means is that tax revenues came in higher than expected over the last year. So we do have this roughly $800 million surplus, which means the forecasts were actually wrong. They were too low, and which is a good thing. But it doesn't mean all our problems are solved. The fact that we have a surplus means it's an opportunity to start filling in some of the gaps that were left in previous years. Pennsylvania has the smallest rainy day fund of all the states. In case there was a fiscal crisis of some sort, we have about 6 hours of operating funds stored in our rainy day fund. So I've talked with some of the legislative leaders, and one of the goals is that we actually do put a significant amount back into the rainy day fund this year because of that revenue surplus, and use this opportunity to start being more responsible rather than simply taking that money and spending it somewhere else.
We hear about the idea of a tax decrease that pops up. Is that really on the table?
I don't believe it's on the table. Obviously, it would be helpful if we could do something like what President Trump did with his significant reform and reduction of taxes, his Tax Cut and Jobs Act. We've seen how well that's worked. That's partly responsible for why we have a surplus, because the economy is now finally moving at the rate it should be. If we could do something like that in Pennsylvania, it would be fantastic, especially addressing our highest in the nation corporate net income tax. That could really spur investment in jobs here in Pennsylvania if we could do that. But I've not heard talk from any of the key legislative leaders, and I've been talking to everyone over the last several weeks, that a tax cut is on the table this year. I think what we should be looking for this year is putting some money aside into the rainy day fund, a responsible spending plan that doesn't spend faster than the rate of inflation plus population growth, and then making sure that we're investing in our future with things like the Educational Improvement Tax Credit that recently passed the House and Senate, a significant increase in a program that helps kids who can't afford it get into private schools when they're in situations where their public schools are failing them. Life and death for the kids who get in it. And right now, about half the kids get rejected every year because the program is capped. So if we could see the caps come off that program, or at least significant increase as the House and Senate have recently passed, that would be extremely beneficial to the future of the Commonwealth, and especially for our kids who desperately need a good education.
All right, we'll talk about that a little bit more in a moment. Restore PA, how does that weave into this discussion? Restore PA is the governor's idea natural. Go ahead.
That's a great question, because the governor talked about the fact that he supposedly didn't want to have any tax increases associated with this budget, which is great. That's a first. And we applaud Governor Wolf for not asking for taxes as part of the budget. But he then started talking about Restore PA, his plan to borrow $4.5 billion, pay it back over 30 years, requiring a payback by the taxpayers of about $8 billion, and to finance that debt by imposing a new energy tax, a third tax on energy producers. He calls it a severance tax. As you know, in Pennsylvania, there's already a impact fee against the gas drilling industry. There's already all the regular corporate taxes that Pennsylvania has, which are very high. Now the governor wants to impose a third tax, a severance tax, on the energy industry, which ultimately gets paid by consumers. And then he wants to use that to pay back this borrowing plan. Thankfully, it sounds to me like a risky scheme, as was once talked about years ago in one of the presidential debates. And if you look at the numbers, it's going to cost the taxpayers almost twice as much as the initial investment. And thankfully, the leadership, especially in the House, had said this is a non-starter. It's not going to happen. It's not going to be part of the budget negotiation. So hopefully that Restore PA program, while it's got some interesting attributes in terms of investing in infrastructure, the idea of borrowing and taxing to make those investments doesn't seem wise. And the legislative leaders in the House especially have spoken out against that plan. Don't think it's going to be on the table.
As part of the budget negotiations, may be brought up again, but we'll see. And what
sure,
about?
Yeah, the governor can keep pushing it down the road, but I don't know that it's going to get the traction he expects.
All right. And what about minimum wage? Is that just occurring simultaneously as the budget conversation, or is that part of the budget conversation?
It's interesting, because I talked to leaders last week who told me that minimum wage is off the table. But I also do a lot of reading, and I'm reading all the, like you said, the AP articles and others, and I keep seeing the idea of some kind of a minimum wage increase as part of the budget negotiation process cropping up. Certainly the governor and his Democratic allies don't want to drop that idea. They seem to be pushing it. The key thing for folks to remember when it comes to the minimum wage increase is, if it's done the way Governor Wolf wants it, it's going to cost tens of thousands of jobs. The Independent Fiscal Office did an analysis of Governor Wolf's plan, and if it were fully implemented, it would cost Pennsylvania upwards of 20,000 jobs lost because of him forcing this minimum wage increase on our small businesses and our nonprofit organizations and all those who are employing people at the lower end of the wage scale. And so it's a dangerous plan. I sincerely appreciate the fact that people are trying in many cases to be good intention when they talk about raising the minimum wage, but what they don't understand, if you look at the economic studies, it always costs jobs. if it doesn't cost them in their job, often it costs them many hours they needed to get the income they needed. And yes, some people will benefit from it, but tens of thousands of others will actually lose their jobs. And that's the key thing that I think we all need to keep in mind as we consider minimum wage being part of the negotiation process this year.
In terms of education, are there any other changes or reforms that are happening within the budget negotiations? And then, of course, that leads to earned income, but that's not the right name for it. It's the education tax credit.
Educational Improvement Tax Credit.
Thank you.
Yeah, and certainly education is always talked about during the budget cycle. It's one of the single largest expenses in the entire budget. Typically, the two big expense areas are public education and human services. They compete. They're always close to each other, but they're drastically the two biggest categories in the state budget. The governor, of course, wants to increase the amount that's delivered to the public schools, and he's gotten an increase of some amount every year that he's been governor, but the legislature supports that as well. The Republican-controlled legislature has always been of a mindset that they also want to invest in the public schools. So the question there is just, what's the number going to be? I've seen numbers for public school spending increases anywhere between $200 million and $400 million being talked about, and that's one of the things that's going to be at the negotiating table this week and into next week as the deadline looms. But going along with that, as you said, there need to be some reforms. And one of the key reforms is the expansion of the Educational Improvement Tax Credit, which would allow for upwards of 50,000 kids who right now aren't getting access to that program to have the opportunity to attend a decent school rather than being stuck by virtue of their zip code in a failing school. And if you've ever, I'm sure you've talked to kids who aren't getting the high-quality education they deserve, or talked to the families of those kids, it's a life-and-death decision for those kids. It determines their future. If they're stuck in a school where they're not going to get math skills and reading skills, if the school is a violent place, a place where there's not going to be the resources that kid needs to succeed, his or her future is really bleak. But if that kid, that same child, can get a small scholarship through this tax credit program where individual companies make a donation and they get a tax credit, and then that money that the companies have donated goes to pay for scholarships for these kids, that kid can have a bright future. And often those same kids who would have failed in the public schools can now choose to go to a private school or a religious school or some other educational opportunity in their area where they can get on the path to getting a good education up through high school, and often then pursuing a professional career at college or trade school or something else down the road. But it's determining that child's future, and to make sure that we don't have these 50,000 kids left out in the cold is going to be critical. And I know Speaker Terzai and
I got to stop you there.
Hard for this. Thank you.
Yeah, on that note, before you get back into another paragraph, I do have to stop you. But, Stephen, thank you so much for all this information. We'll be back in touch when a budget is passed. We're going to need some analysis. We'll turn back to you for some assistance.
Mark, thank you so much for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Yep, glad to help. Stephen Bloom, Vice President, Commonwealth Foundation. Thanks for checking in. CommonwealthFoundation.org if you want to bone up on their issues and topics and their monitoring the state budget. We'll talk to some of the other folks with all kinds of views on the state budget in future editions of WKOK Sunrise and On the Mark.